You're listening to How To 20-Something, the only podcast that helps both men and women navigate their 20s and learn how to adult across all aspects of their lives. We're going to be focusing on career, relationships, finances, fitness, nutrition, and all of the common challenges and obstacles a typical 20-something will face in this post-college life and what to do about it. I'm your host, Jess Diamond, and I am the CEO and founder of Jess Diamond Coaching, where I help young professionals get their shit together, gain their confidence, and own their life. No one prepares you for this adulting world, so allow me to help you feel like you are no longer a chicken running around with its head cut off, and that you actually know what the hell is going on and what your next step to take is. Welcome to How To 20-Something. Welcome back to another episode of How To 20-Something. If you're up to date with these episodes, then you know that the last several guest episodes have been centered around a more regimented approach to losing body fat and basically eating and training in a way that manipulates your body to get the results you want. Well, this episode revolves around throwing the strict regimen out the window and how you can begin a healthy, sustainable journey around eating and moving intuitively. I will say, I used to not move intuitively. I would go based off of, okay, Monday is legs, Tuesday is push, Wednesday is cardio, and so on and so forth. And I could do that because I never missed a day, so I wasn't skipping body parts. But over the last 2 years, I've learned to listen to my body and respond accordingly, and I know what that looks like for me, and also how that changes based off of the season of life I am in. So I can't wait for you guys to hear Sarah's approaches to moving your body intuitively as well as eating for your body's needs. And over the course of this episode, we're going to dive into what diet culture is and how people typically get stuck in the yo-yoing of dieting. We're going to debunk your views around being anti-diet. We're going to help you switch your mindset to taking care of your body for the long term and how you can get started on your own journey. But before we give you all of that wonderful information, I'm going to introduce Sarah so you know a little bit about her and why you should listen up to everything she's about to say. Sarah is a passionate health and life coach dedicated to empowering resilient women to redefine their relationship with food, body, and movement. With a bachelor's in exercise physiology and master's in health education, she guides her clients through a transformative journey of self-discovery and healing from unhealthy food habits. Sarah's coaching approach focuses on empowering women to ditch dieting and embrace intuitive eating, helping them to develop a nurturing connection with their bodies and move with kindness and self-care. Her coaching style is characterized by authenticity and empathy, creating a safe space for women to challenge societal norms and embrace self-compassion. Outside coaching, Sarah is an avid runner, coffee lover, and travel enthusiast who finds joy in exploring local trails and lakeside retreats. Join me in welcoming Sarah as she shares her wisdom and insights on intuitive eating and moving the body with kindness. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to How To 20-Something.
Hey, Jess. Oh, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Of course. I'm excited to have you here. Now, I want to begin with having you just share a bit of your story because I think a lot of people can relate to a history of disordered eating. I know I can, and I joke around my body dysmorphia, even though I'm not really joking, that I just have no idea what I look like. And you and I both come from an athletic background growing up and how our views of our body define who we are and our worth. So can you walk us through how you've shifted your relationship with your body and how that helps you coach your clients to be successful within the context of their lives?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's a great place to start out because I think everybody's come from, and I'm sure everybody listening to this podcast kind of has a different background, but there are a lot of similarities that kind of link us all together. And that's kind of how it is with my clients. And I think why you wanted to bring me on today. So to give a little context of how I got to where I am right now is that growing up, I had a very different perspective of my body than I do now. Growing up, I was in a bigger body, bigger than my girlfriends, bigger than my sister. And at that age, as we all know, what really matters is fitting in. Like we all want to fit in. And I didn't have that. And so as I got older, I also lived through some different experiences that kind of confirmed this thinking that I had about being different, whether that was bullying or being told that I needed to lose weight every time I went to the doctor's office, or not being able to simply find clothes that fit my body at like the cool stores at the mall. And so I started feeling this pressure that I needed to change something. And so I did what a lot of people do. I turned to dieting. I started dieting and I worked out every day. And sometimes it got to that point where I was working out multiple times a day, and I became heavily obsessed with food, with tracking, using MyFitnessPal. So I was doing all the things, right? And the thing is that I did lose the weight, sure, but even when I was in my smallest body, when I was at my smallest weight, I was actually my most unhealthy. And when I was in my smallest body, I was being diagnosed as having an eating disorder. I had body dysmorphia, like you mentioned, and I was way overtraining my body to the point where I was having missed periods and headaches all the time. I had a lot of trouble concentrating. And what I think was most difficult was that I was still unhappy. Like, I was doing all this work, but I was still like disappointed that I was not getting the results that I was striving for. And so back to your question about how I shifted this relationship is that I had to get really honest about what I was doing, right? I had to spend some time reflecting, asking myself some hard questions, because what I was doing at the time, I thought was healthy. I thought I was doing the right thing. I thought that I was doing what I needed to do in order to be loved and accepted and to fit in. And at that time, I didn't realize that there was another route, that there was something else I could have been doing. And I really do believe that a lot of 20-somethings that are listening to this podcast can relate to all of that, where you are trying absolutely everything in the name of health and you're still not satisfied, not getting the results that you want. And it's so frustrating. It's so, like, it just leaves you feeling completely defeated. Like, what's going on? Why is this not working? You know?
Yeah. I love that you mentioned how this started with you just wanted to fit in, because that never goes away. That is something that is constantly in our brains. As humans, we have the drive, the need, the desire to have that sense of belonging. And if we don't like the way we look, or if we feel really uncomfortable going shopping with our friends because we can't shop at the same stores, I'm going to be honest, I can't speak to personal experience of that. I have naturally had a small frame. That's why I'm bringing on someone like you to talk about this type of experience. It messes with you psychologically, of you want to try to do everything as healthy as possible, and then you get into this very restrictive mindset. And you even mentioned, I have an episode that came out prior to the one that we're recording right now, of the 7 signs you're overtraining. And you're mentioning that you were experiencing that overtraining. And I think from an athletic background, that also ties into it. It's you're constantly looking at your body and how it moves compared to how another girl's body and how hers moves, how it looks when you're taking pictures. It's all just always in your face, and it's nearly impossible to avoid. So what are some of the first things you do with your clients to help them kind of change this mindset, to develop a more healthier relationship to loving themselves so that they can then be loved by others?
Yeah, I think, you know, the beginning of everybody's journey is going to look a little bit different. But where I typically meet somebody at for the first time, or even, you know, as we know, some people are on this journey doing it on their own without the assistance of a coach. And so this is a big mistake that I see a lot, is that when you are at the beginning of this like intuitive journey and you are working on trying to embrace yourself and who you are, the focus is typically on what's happening on the outside, right? How do I look? What is my appearance? What are other people seeing? Or what am I eating or not eating, or how am I moving my body? So a lot of the time I'm meeting somebody for the first time and it's all about the external, but that's not where we want to start. We want to shift that focus to the internal, what is happening on the inside. So we flip the focus to what's going on in our head and in our body, whether that's our thoughts and our feelings. And when we can get into that space, that's where we can really shift to what I consider like the good stuff, right? That is where we really want to start. So one way that I really enjoy beginning somebody's intuitive journey, like if they are right at the beginning, is really changing that narrative. So something that we can all do and something that your listeners can do right now is you can relate to self-talk, right? We all have self-talk. Some experience more negative self-talk than others, but we all have some level of it. And so I call my negative self-talk my critter brain, and feel free to name your, you know, negative self-talk voice as well, because it's just so much easier to call out like, oh, that's just my critter brain talking. But where my clients are coming from before we even start the journey is this place of not feeling like they are enough, or that they are this project, that their body is this project that needs fixed, or that there is something wrong with their body, or that they have this history of dieting. And so they are used to feeling like nothing seems to work for me. And so when we are having this experience in our head or in our body, we can have this feeling of low self-esteem or lacking confidence or feeling uncomfortable in our physical self, or maybe just absolutely confused about what am I supposed to be eating or how am I supposed to work out? Like, I don't even know where to begin. And so what I help my clients do is start by catching that negative narrative, those critical words that often form around those behaviors and that confusion and from that place of lack of confidence. And whether it's verbally, you know, the things that you are saying out loud, or maybe it's just the internal words that you're having in a full-on discussion with yourself. And this is such an important place to start, because those words that you are using are creating this negative story loop. Okay. And you just keep reliving it over and over and over again. And if we can start identifying those common words that we are using when to talk about ourselves in a way that's not very helpful, once we can identify them, then we get to start changing them and replacing them with other words that are more encouraging and more supportive. So that's just one tip. It's something that I do right off the bat, because those words that we're using to speak have such a huge influence on how we are seeing ourselves, thinking about ourselves, and then the resulting behavior because of what we're thinking and feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. I call the brain critters or critter brain my mind gremlins. And I'll have clients do a similar experience with that of just separating your thought from yourself, of like saying, I am having the thought that. So then it just kind of takes it out of you and it doesn't encourage this false reality that you continue to live in. And because it does, it drives these more toxic behaviors that are not conducive to your goals. They're not actually going to help you be healthy or live a sustainable lifestyle. You're going into a different fad because you're basing all of your actions off of how you feel in that moment, based off of that emotion, which also is going to change on the time of day, on the part of your cycle that you're in, on like your, it changes off of everything, off of what you ate last night. You're gonna wake up feeling different. It's so many different things. So knowing that your brain is trying to deceive you, we need to understand how those thoughts are not actually your reality. So how do we transform it into your reality? But I want to say that the episode that comes out right before yours talks about training with your cycle. And in that episode, I bring up the point of it's really just listening to your body. You and I do a lot of the similar work when it comes to that awareness factor of get in your own skin, see what, like, feel what's happening, So what are some ways that you help people begin this intuitive journey, we could say, like, in relation to fitness and nutrition outside of that negative self-talk? So what is that next way? How do they intuitively move? How do they intuitively eat? What are some beginner level steps that the listeners can take right now?
Yeah. I think another way to really begin this intuitive journey, and something that I have found a lot of success with, or my clients have found success with, is changing the way that you are viewing yourself. Sometimes you kind of see yourself, like you were just explaining, with your thoughts and kind of separating them to the two. Sometimes we can do that to the point where it's kind of dangerous, because we see ourselves as something separate then. And so that's where that idea of, like, we are just a project to fix, or we are just something like an obstacle that's getting in our way from, you know, fitting in or having success. And so I encourage my clients to look at themselves as their own best friend, right? And as 20 somethings, like, we, like, our friendships mean the absolute world to us. Like, that is something that we hold tightly and find so much value in. And so who are we spending the most time with, right? It's ourselves. Like, we spend the most time with nobody than ourselves. And so if you are in a space where you highly dislike yourself, or you're talking crap about yourself all the time, like, that relationship is not healthy, right? It's not supportive. Something that I like to work on with my clients is to start looking at yourself as your best friend. And how would you treat your best friend? Because the thing with dieting, if you're coming from a history of dieting, is that a diet kind of forces you to disconnect with your body. When you're on a diet, you are kind of forced to begin ignoring those natural hunger cues. You kind of are forced to kind of ignore those signs of, like, oh, maybe I should rest today. And after a extended amount of time of ignoring these signals that our body is sending, whether it's hunger or fullness or I need a rest day, you start to lose this sense of trust between your body and your brain. So becomes this disconnect. If we are looking at ourselves as our best friend, what kind of friendship do we want if there is no trust, if there is no basic sense of understanding, right? That friendship won't exist, right? So it's so important to really spend some time, you know, relearning these signals that are so natural for the body to be sending us, in order to begin fueling your body and moving your body in an intuitive way that feels good for you.
Yeah. So one of the gyms that I do one-on-one personal training at has this giant chalkboard wall. And it's funny that what you were saying is exactly what I wrote on the wall, is the longest relationship you're ever going to have is with yourself. Because it's true. It's like, you need to treat yourself with that kindness. So conceptualizing it of viewing yourself as your best friend and nurturing that relationship and taking care of that person and not completely shitting on them all the time. Like, you're not going to do that to your best friend. At least I hope not. So it's just another way to view your relationship to yourself. I like that you use the word disconnect, that going into a diet mentality, it's basically a similar representation of you're a computerized system. And we're not. We have different needs. We have emotions. We have changing factors in our life all the time. We're not a system that just spews out the calories that we're supposed to consume. It's like, it's so different. The metabolism is so complex, and basing it only off of this really strict, narrow-minded thinking is just not good for you. It does create that sense of disconnect that you brought up. So I love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you were to talk about diet culture, and you wanted to, like, I feel like when you talk about diet culture, when you do on social media or on anything that I see that you do, which Sarah's social media is amazing. You guys will follow her. We'll put all of her stuff in the show notes and talk about it at the end of the episode. But think one of the things that amp you up, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is people's view of diet culture. So I want you to just set the record straight of what is diet culture, where do people kind of get it all twisted, and where do you come in to help with that?
Yeah, like you just said, I absolutely love talking about diet culture. It really hypes me up. It's something I'm incredibly passionate about. And like you said, you'll go to my page and you'll know that real quick. But at its core, for those listening that are what the heck is Jess talking about? What is diet culture? So at its core, diet culture is just a collection of beliefs and ideals that focus around and really value weight, our body shape and size over health and well-being. So it's this belief that thin is better, or being in a smaller body equals healthy, quote unquote healthy. And you might be thinking, okay, well, I don't value, my size over well-being. But the thing is it's way more than that. Diet culture is so sneaky, and that's what gets me fired up, because something that is portrayed as healthy or something that's good for you can be diet culture in disguise. And so for you to maybe start thinking about your own life experiences and where diet culture might be slipping into your day-to-day, diet culture can look like labeling your food. As simple as labeling your food as good or bad, or looking at food as healthy or unhealthy. Diet culture also looks like looking at your body naked or maybe in a swimsuit and only seeing imperfections. Diet culture also looks like limiting or avoiding certain food groups, whether it's, carbohydrates or dairy or sugar. And it could also be attempting to suppress your hunger, ignoring your hunger with water, coffee, gum, nicotine, whatever it is for you. Diet culture also looks like working out with the single goal of weight loss and, getting quote unquote bikini ready. And where the problem lies, why this is a problem, is because it creates weight stigma. It creates food obsession. It creates eating disorders. It impacts our body image. It causes so much stress on our mental health. And the biggest problem of all, and why I just want to scream this information from rooftops, is because diets don't work in the long term. Okay, sure, you can lose your 10 pounds in a couple weeks, but they don't work. They're not sustainable. So when you work really, really hard to lose the weight and then you end up gaining it back, there's a good chance that you're going to then blame your body or point the finger at your willpower, right? Or you start to believe that you did something wrong, that it's your fault that the diet didn't work. When in fact, the diet was never going to be sustainable in the first place. So it's not your fault. It's not your body's fault. And so here we are, men and women all over. What we are doing is fighting this industry, right? This diet industry that is, the last time I looked it up, it was worth more than $72 billion. So we're fighting this massive industry that knows exactly what to do to keep you coming back, right? It is so smart. And so I completely understand why you might keep going back to a diet. Okay. It is really tough. It really is. And what's more than that is that dieting is so normalized in our culture that it seems like it's almost our only option. If you're not dieting, what are you doing? Right? So you're kind of in a tough place if you don't know there's another option available to you or for you.
Yeah. There's a saying in the gym of, if you chase health, aesthetics will follow. If you chase aesthetics, you'll lose your health. So I think that really just summarizes all of that, because I met another coach about almost 2 years ago, and she was going to write a book, and she never did, and I really wanted her to write it, and it was called Chasing Skinny. because it is, you are constantly after the smaller version of yourself, and small doesn't mean healthy. It's a thinking of knowing that the diet you're on, if you're going into it with, it's just temporary, it's only for 6 weeks, or it's only for 30 days, or it's only the 75 hard, and you're not thinking of how you can carry this into the rest of your life, then it's not sustainable. It's not the diet. The diet is not going to work for you. That's where it comes into play of the diet that works for you is the diet you can do for the rest of your life. And it's not diet as in restrict. It's diet as in what are the foods you're eating.
Yeah. And our body is just so smart that what happens is a lot of us have our first diet and we get so much success. We lose the weight and we do eventually gain it back. And so we think we can just start another diet and we're going to have the same success. But our body is learning and it remembers what that starvation felt like. It remembers what that restriction felt like. So it is going to fight you when you stop feeding yourself. It's going to slow your metabolism down. It's going to start amplifying all of those cravings. So it's not that something's wrong with you, like why am I craving all these things when I'm trying not to have them? It's literally your body sending signals like, hey, feed me, I need nutrients because I'm uncomfortable right now. And so, yeah, so as you continue to do diet after diet, you're going to see less and less results because your body is getting smarter as you continue repeating these behaviors over and over again.
Yeah, your body is really good at adapting to whatever you tell it to. So wouldn't you rather tell it something that's going to boost your metabolism, that's going to make you healthy, and teach it that and have that be what it resorts to every time rather than the opposite of restrict and eat less and starve yourself and try to resist these cravings as best you can, knowing very well that you can't all the time? Like by the end of the day, it's not happening. That's why you're going back to the pantry and why you're looking for the chocolate chips at the bottom of the refrigerator drawer. Speaking from experience, it's like, this is real. This is what happens. This is, everybody experiences this at some point or another. And it's because of how normalized the diet industry is.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And you and I are anti-diet, but that also doesn't mean we're anti-health. And I think this is also where the body positivity movement takes things a bit too far, at where it's like, oh, love your body, but don't take care of it. Just love what you're doing right now. And it's like, no, you need to take care of it and then also know that it can only get so far. Can you explain what anti-diet really is and how it's not anti-health?
Yeah, so anti-diet, just to put simply, this as simply as I can, anti-diet is actively choosing not to follow guidelines or rules when it comes to your food choices and how you are choosing to move your body. It is breaking away from the rigid structure of what a diet is. Anti-diet is choosing not to support or engage in, you know, the restrictive dieting for the sole purpose of weight loss or other, you know, non-medical reasons. But instead, it's looking at all foods and all forms of physical activity as a way to support your overall health and well-being. And anti-diet is this understanding and belief that all foods and all forms of movement can fit into a healthy and balanced way of life. It is this understanding that food is not as simple as calories in, calories out, or looking at physical fitness or physical activity as simply just burning calories or simply just trying to lose weight so that you can fit into a smaller pant size. You know, food and movement can be and is so much more than that. And so when you are choosing to be anti-diet or choosing to ditch dieting, what you're saying basically is like, goodbye, good riddance, see you later, toxic diet culture ways. And you're introducing and saying hello and welcoming in the idea and opportunities to have a more balanced and intuitive relationship with your food choices and the way that you're choosing to move your body. But of course, like, it's so much easier said than done. You know, if you have a long history of dieting like I did, I mean, I spent, I think, almost 15 years, if not longer, dieting. And so you can't expect to just get intuitive eating and intuitive movement down overnight. It comes with time. It comes with practice. But with that time, with that practice, you know, you are able to then unlearn all that diet mentality. You can then begin relearning, you know, how to fuel your body in a way that feels good for you. You know, it's an option. And that's what so many people in diet culture, stuck in the diet, they don't realize.
Yeah, I think a lot of the 20-somethings listening, I think a lot of 30-somethings as well, all grew up with moms who went on different diets. I know my house was filled with Jenny Craig and Weight Watchers points and just going from one thing to the next, and mom's on a diet. Nope, never mind, she's not. Nope, now she is again. And it was very obvious in our upbringing. So now it's unlearning a lot of the things that we were exposed to on a subconscious level as a child and bring it into today's world where there's just different things, different options that you can go and exist in and have it be healthy and have it help you develop a better relationship with your body and with your life and how you fit into all of it. Is there anything that you have to say around, I know you talked about like the diet industry and how it's a $1 billion industry and it's marketed very well to keep you coming back. So how have you helped your clients get out of that diet mode of, but wait, I can just go back to Jenny Craig. I'm sorry, Jenny Craig, I keep using it as an example, but I can go back to Jenny Craig and lose that weight again. Why would I do this slower approach?
Yeah. Yeah. And that is tough. And it is something that my clients have to confront. It is a barrier for a lot of people. There is this like, oh, but this has proven success for me in the past. But I always ask for them to get serious. Like, but has it worked? If the diet worked, you wouldn't have to stay on it, right? You would do it and then you'd be done. And then you would stay the size that you're at and you would live happily ever after. But that's just not the case. And so we kind of have to make sure that we take a really hard look at, but was it successful? Yes, it is the quick fix, but is that what you want? And if that's what you want, great, go for it. But then I'm not going to be there to support you, and I don't think you will either. So you have to decide what matters to you, what is important. If you want something that's a quick fix, you then know that you're going to lose it just as quickly. But if you do put in the time, if you put in the effort for something that is going to be sustainable and long lasting, well, then you have that to look forward to for the rest of your life. Like where I'm at now, sure, I spent maybe 15 years dieting and really disliking the body that I was in and even disliking who I was because of what I was striving for. But because I took the time to learn what intuitive eating is, what intuitive movement is, I'm here now. And I have the rest of my life to live in this place where I embrace the food that I'm eating. I'm allowed to have whatever I want. I can move my body however I want. And it's just this place of freedom. And I want to make sure that I note too, that that doesn't mean that I don't have hard days, right? Just because I am an intuitive eater and I engage in intuitive movement doesn't mean that I have days where, you know, I look at my body, I'm like, huh. And I start to, you know, my little critter brain starts to do its thing. But that's just human of us, right? There is no getting rid of that part of us. But when you learn how to be an intuitive eater, it comes with all of these tools so that when you have those moments of questioning, like, is this right for me? Am I doing it right? Or you start questioning, like, should I just go back to the diet because that was kind of easier? I knew exactly what to do. I knew exactly what to eat. When we have those thoughts, as an intuitive eater, you have all these tools and resources and understanding of how to get right back out of that mindset, because deep down you know that intuitive eating is serving you way better than the diet ever did.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking mentally as you were talking, of knowing that we can't stop your brain from all the chatter, from all the negativity, but we can, for one, decrease it at least, and then two, know what to do when those thoughts come up, because they do come up. You're not going to love what you see every day, all the time. It's just not realistic. It's being real with yourself of, okay, I'm having this moment, but I'm still going to take care of myself. I'm still going to eat well. I'm still going to move my body in some way. And it's not just being like, well, you know what? The day is ruined. I'm going to go eat an entire cake by myself and cry on the bathroom floor. Like, there's a difference. And I also want to add to that of intuitive eating, which I want you to actually explain what are some common misconceptions around it. But first want to say intuitive eating isn't, oh, I'm craving cake. I'm going to use cake again. I don't know why. Top of my head, I guess. Maybe I'm craving cake. they're like, I want cake. I'm going to go eat this giant thing of cake. It's like, no, I want cake. I'm going to have a piece of it. I'm not going to make myself sick over it, but I'm also not going to tell myself I can't have any of it. It's having that balance. So what are some common misconceptions you hear around intuitive eating and intuitive moving?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Exactly how you just put it. That is intuitive eating. It's giving yourself full permission to eat what you want, when you want, however much you want. Okay. But there is a common misconception there of, okay, well, if I can eat whatever I want, whenever I want, then I'm going to be eating cake all the time. I'm going to eat cake for breakfast, for lunch, and for dinner, and probably a little dessert. But in the beginning, there is like this, like, messy middle where you are trying to figure out, you are trying to unlearn the diet and learn new information about what intuitive eating is. And so there is this like kind of messy, like, oh, I'm not really sure I'm doing this right phase where it's like, okay, I'm eating a lot of cake. Like, what's going on? And a lot of people can get tripped up by this, but that is part of the process. You have to go through this point where you are giving yourself permission to have the cake and eat what you want. And then when you're done, you're done. And that can bring up a lot of fear for people because, of course, like, nobody wants to be thinking like, oh, if I become an intuitive eater, that means I have to eat cake all day long. But like I'm saying, it's just a small fraction of what intuitive is. It is just a part of the process. But back to, you know, I can eat whatever I want, whenever I want. It's not that. It is, yes, if you want to have pasta for dinner, have your pasta for dinner. But it's more of, once you are in this place of connection with your body is communicating with you too. It's not you just, you know, putting your queen crown on and you are just reigning over your body and you are just telling it what to do. Like, your body is also communicating with you and it is telling you what it wants, right? So some days I crave pasta and you know what? I allow myself pasta. But other days, all I want is like a juicy apple or a massive kale salad. And so it's like this mixture of everything. And when you give yourself the permission to eat whatever you want, you experience this perfect balance of all the fruits, all the vegetables, you have your sweets, you have your carbs, and everything eventually kind of equals out. And so it's not this, you know, I'm just going to end up eating cheeseburgers or fast food, because actually, if you think about it, do you think you really want to eat cheeseburgers every meal of the day? Like, that would make you sick, right? And even if a cheeseburger is your absolute favorite food, eventually you'll get to a point of like, oh, I can't even look at another cheeseburger. And so that is all part of the process. And eventually you get to this really amazing space where it's like, yeah, I eat what I want when I want, and there's no more binging. There's no more guilt. There's no more shame. So I can have the pasta, the cheeseburger, the cake, the salad, the fruit, whatever it is, and it all balances out at the end of the day.
I want to know your thoughts on intuitively eating and meal prepping, because from my understanding, it would be, because I meal prep. So from my understanding, it would be you can have your prepped food, and it's more so based off of timing of eating when you're hungry rather than what it is you want in that moment. Because I think a lot of times what happens is the end of the day comes, we're all exhausted. There is not a single person I've ever met that isn't exhausted by the time dinner comes around. And that's one of the worst things about adulting is figuring out what to eat for dinner every single night. So this is where planning ahead kind of comes into play, but also knowing that planning doesn't mean you're going to be eating intuitively in terms of what it is. So what are your thoughts in terms of meal prepping, planning ahead, and then being intuitive and following that path?
Yeah, I am also a big fan of meal prepping because there's a lot of pros. One, when you meal prep, it's convenience, right? If you are short on time, that food is already prepped. You just have to heat it up and then you have your meal and you're satisfied. So you have that convenience factor, which is great. But also, as an intuitive eater, that meal prep can look different every single week. Like, I remember when I was dieting, I was having the broccoli, rice, and chicken, right? That's what everybody was eating when on a diet. And eventually, like, you just never wanted to look at a baked chicken breast ever again because it's like, okay, this is just crazy. But with meal prep, there's the convenience factor. But also, you know, I was thinking about this the other day of when I pack my lunch in. My lunch bag is absolutely bursting at the seams because I never know what I'm going to want. So I have fruits, vegetables, I have trail mix, I have maybe something that I had for dinner the night before. I have it all in there. I have all these options. And so when I get to, you know, work, I can open my lunch bag and be like, what sounds good? And I have all these options to choose from. And so, sure, maybe I'll grab the apple or maybe I'll grab the trail mix, but having options in a quote unquote like meal prepped way, you know, that just gives you more variety and options. And so maybe that's an option for you. Maybe it's not. Maybe you don't want to pack a full lunch bag, but I'm definitely pro, you know, meal prep. But I will say, at the end of the day, when it comes to intuitive eating, it's about what sounds good, what will feel good, what's going to nourish my body, what's going to make me happy. Okay, so if that prepped meal is kind of going to leave you still wanting more, that's on you to decide. You can have your prepped meal, and if you're still like wanting something, well, explore what that something is. And there's nothing wrong with that. Maybe you decide, okay, I'm just going to leave this prepped meal for tomorrow and I'm going to make something else. And sure, it's no longer that convenience factor and maybe you're picking something up on the road. But if you have this meal prepped meal versus something you grab out of takeout, okay, at the end of the day, if you force yourself to eat something you do not want, you're going to keep going back to the pantry all night long because your body is not satisfied. Versus if you just go through the drive-through and get what your body is actually asking for, you're going to have that meal, you're going to be satisfied, and then you can move on with your life.
I love that. We've talked a lot about eating intuitively. We haven't touched too much on training intuitively other than just listening to your body. So can you give just some examples of what training intuitively looks like for, let's say, like any type of avatar that comes to your mind?
Yeah, intuitive movement is, and I know you use the word training, but movement, I use movement a lot. It's the same thing as exercise, whatever, physical activity, however you refer to the way you're moving your body. When it comes to intuitive movement, there are just so many benefits. And honestly, when you are starting out, it really comes down to just like how with food is tuning into your body. Turning it, reflecting inward and asking yourself, what kind of movement is going to feel best for me right now? What's going to serve my body? You know, when we are coming from an athletic background, workouts look very rigid. There is a right way and a wrong way to work out. And we have this idea of what is quote unquote a good workout or what workout actually counts. And when you turn towards intuitive movement, all of that BS goes out the window, right? Any form of movement counts. Okay, there is no right or wrong way to move your body. Now, of course, you want good form. There are some logistics. Like, you want that form matters. You don't want to injure yourself. Wipe off your machines, people. Like, there are things that count that you have to take into consideration. But there is no quote unquote good workout versus bad workout. It all comes down to, okay, what kind of energy do I have to give to my workout right now? How much time do I have? Like, for some of us, we only have 10 minutes. And if that's all we got and we want to go move around, like, we have to adapt to the flexibility that intuitive movement gives us versus my mindset used to be like walking was not good enough. I never used to go on walks because I didn't see walking as a workout. And so I was just like, that doesn't count. But now I'm obsessed. I love walking. It is so enjoyable for me. And it counts. Like, it counts because I decided it counts. And you get to make that decision for yourself too.
Yeah, I love that message. I think from the past episodes that I've recorded that'll be leading up to this one, it's more so the regimen comes into very specific physique goals. But at the end of the day, we want you to be healthy. You want to be healthy because that's what's going to help you last a long, happy life. It's what you're doing on a day-to-day basis. And if you want to take it to those extremes, you are more than welcome to, like, but don't do it on your own. Hire a bodybuilding coach or hire someone that is well-equipped to taking you into those extremes and then back out of those extremes so that you can be happy with your body. This is just another approach to all of that. It's listening to your body, which all of the other ones have also dealt with. This is in more of an intuitive sense and developing that relationship with yourself that you have lost along the way.
Yeah.
Are there any final messages that you want to leave my audience with? Anything that you're like, wait, all the 20-somethings in the world need to know this exact thing?
I'm not sure if there's one message because my head is just full of so much, and just go to my page because I'm seriously on something new every single day because there's just so much. And I always feel like, oh, people don't know this. Oh, people definitely don't know this. Oh, they really need to know this. But honestly, my takeaway for the listeners is that if you are in a place where you are, you know, you're fighting your body, right? You're in this place where you are just unhappy with your efforts. Like, you are putting in the work, but you're not seeing the results that you are striving for. You know, if you are doing the workouts, if you're eating the food and you're still not feeling like the confidence or the self-esteem in your body, well, I would just encourage you to reach out for support. I can't speak for Jess, but we get you. We know where you're at right now. We know the struggle that you're in, even though everybody's story is different. Everybody's situation is different, but there's enough similarities that we understand where you're at, and it completely sucks. And Jess and I didn't get to where we are right now by ourselves. This work isn't meant to be done on your own. It's just, one, it'll take you so much longer, and it's just not as much fun. So I encourage you to reach out for support because deep down, I mean, my wholehearted belief for all of my clients and in my future clients is that you deserve to be living a full life. Okay. You deserve to be living. And it's not just the deserve, it's available to you. A life where you can eat all the foods that you want without that side of judgment, without that critter brain. You can live a life where your movement isn't strictly determined by, you know, how much you're eating or what you're eating. You can live a life where you're nourishing your body in a way that gives you the energy for all these hobbies that you're trying to do or all the things, like, just trying to get your life together. Like, that takes energy. It takes brain power. And to do it, you have to be fed. You have to fuel yourself to have energy to do anything. Okay, so I just encourage you, reach out for support if you're in a place of like, I don't even know what I'm doing. I'm doing all the things and I still am confused.
Yeah, there's a lot of information out there, and it is confusing. That's what one of my newest clients, she's 23 and has a really good head, like brain in her head, and is like, I'm reaching out because I am confused and I'm lost and I don't want to do this wrong. So she sought out the support she needed. And like, that's, we're encouraging you to do that. Our businesses exist for your benefit. We want to help you. We feel so amazing helping you feel amazing. It almost feels selfish in that way of, I want to help you so bad so I can feel good too. But amazing. Sarah, thank you so much for coming on How To 20-something. Where can people find you if they want to get in touch with you and your coaching or follow your Instagram? Just how can people find you?
Yeah, you can search me at Sarah Mulnerick Coaching and you will find me everywhere. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, join the email. I'm all there. Reach out. I would love to chat with you.
Yep. And her information, as you guys know by now, will all be linked in the show notes for you to access right away. And if you liked what you heard, or if you learned something new, or if you're ready to begin your own intuitive journey, please share this episode with a friend or on social media. Contact Sarah, contact me, or tag Sarah when you do. But otherwise, this concludes another episode of How To 20-something. I can't wait to be in your headphones again next week with another brand new episode.